He heard the soft sound of snow falling from a branch onto the snow on the ground. A little wind was rising. He felt it on his face. Suddenly he felt a panic that she might not come. The wind rising now reminded him how soon it would be morning. More snow fell from the branches, as he heard the wind now moving the pine tops. "Come now, Maria. Please come here now, quickly," he thought. "Oh, come here now. Do not wait. There is no importance any more to your waiting until they are asleep." Then he saw her coming out from under the blanket that covered the cave mouth. She stood there a moment, and he knew it was she, but he could not see what she was doing. He whistled a low whistle, and she was still at the cave mouth doing something in the darkness of the rock shadow. Then she came running, carrying something in her hands, and he saw her running long-legged through the snow. Then she was kneeling by the robe, her head pushed hard against him, slapping snow from her feet. She kissed him and handed him her bundle.
"Put it with thy pillow," she said. "I took these off there to save time."
"You came barefoot through the snow?"
"Yes," she said, "and wearing only my wedding shirt."
He held her close and tight in his arms, and she rubbed her head against his chin.
"Avoid the feet," she said. "They are very cold, Roberto."
"Put them here and warm them."
"Nay," she said, "they will warm quickly. But say quickly now that you love me."
"I love thee."
"Good, good, good."
"I love thee, little rabbit."
"Do you love my wedding shirt?"
"It is the same one as always."
"Yes, as last night. It is my wedding shirt."
"Put thy feet here."
"Nay, that would be abusive. They will warm of themselves. They are warm to me. It is only that the snow has made them cold toward thee. Say it again."
"I love thee, my little rabbit."
"I love thee too, and I am thy wife."
"Were they asleep?"
"No," she said, "but I could support it no longer." "And what importance has it?"
"None," he said, and felt her against him, slim and long and warmly lovely. "No other thing has importance."
"Put thy hand on my head," she said, "and then let me see if I can kiss thee." "Was it well?" she asked.
"Yes," he said. "Take off thy wedding shirt."
"You think I should?"
"Yes, if thou wilt not be cold."
"Que va, cold. I am on fire."
"I too. But afterwards thou wilt not be cold?"
"No. Afterwards we will be as one animal of the forest, and be so close that neither one can tell that one of us is one and not the other. Can you not feel my heart be your heart?"
"Yes. There is no difference."
"Now, feel. I am thee, and thou art me, and all of one is the other. And I love thee, oh, I love thee so. Are you not truly one? Canst thou not feel it?"
"Yes," he said, "it is true."
"And feel now. Thou hast no heart but mine."
"Nor any other legs, nor feet, nor of the body."
"But we are different," she said. "I would have us exactly the same."
"You do not mean that."
"Yes, I do, I do. That is a thing I had to tell thee."
"You do not mean that."
"Perhaps I do not," she said, speaking softly with her lips against his shoulder. "But I wish to say it. Since we are different, I am glad that thou art Roberto and I Maria. But if thou should ever wish to change, I would be glad to change. I would be thee because I love thee so."
"I do not wish to change. It is better to be one and each one to be the one he is."
"But we will be one now, and there will never be a separate one."
Then she said,
"I will be thee when thou art not there. Oh, I love thee so, and I must care well for thee."
"Maria."
"Yes."
"Maria."
"Yes."
"Maria."
"Oh, yes, please."
"Art thou not cold?"
"Oh, no. Pull the robe over thy shoulders."
"Maria."
"I cannot speak."
"Oh, Maria, Maria, Maria." Then afterwards, close, with the night cold outside and the long warmth of the robe, her head touching his cheek, she lay quiet and happy against him, and then said softly,
"And now?"
"Como tu," he said.
"Yes," she said. "But it was not as this afternoon."
"No."
"But I loved it more. One does not need to die."
"Ojalá no," he said. "I hope not."
"I did not mean that."
"I know. I know what thou meanest. We mean the same."
Then why did you say that instead of what I meant?
With a man there is a difference.
Then I am glad that we are different.
And so am I, he said. But I understood about the dying. I only spoke thus as a man from habit. I feel the same as thee.
However thou art, and however thou speakest, is how I would have thee be.
And I love thee, and I love thy name, Maria.
It is a common name.
No, he said, it is not common.
Now should we sleep? She said. I could sleep easily.
Let us sleep, he said. And he felt the long, light body warm against him, comforting against him, abolishing loneliness against him, magically, by a simple touching of flanks, of shoulders, and of feet, making an alliance against death with him. And he said, Sleep well, little long rabbit.
She said, I am asleep already.
I am going to sleep, he said.
Sleep well, beloved.
Then he was asleep, and happy as he slept. But in the night he woke and held her tight as though she were all of life, and it was being taken from him. He held her feeling she was all of life there was, and it was true. But she was sleeping well and soundly, and she did not wake. So he rolled away onto his side and pulled the robe over her head and kissed her once on her neck under the robe, and then pulled the pistol lanyard up and put the pistol by his side where he could reach it handily. And then he lay there in the night, thinking. Chapter 21. A warm wind came with daylight, and he could hear the snow melting in the trees and the heavy sound of its falling. It was a late spring morning. He knew with the first breath he drew that the snow had been only a freak storm in the mountains, and it would be gone by noon. Then he heard a horse coming, the hoofs bawled with the wet snow thumping dully as the horseman trotted. He heard the noise of a carbine scabbard slapping loosely and the creak of leather.
Maria, he said, and shook the girl's shoulder to waken her. Keep thyself under the robe.
And he buttoned his shirt with one hand and held the automatic pistol in the other, loosening the safety catch with his thumb. He saw the girl's cropped head disappear with a jerk under the robe, and then he saw the horseman coming through the trees. He crouched now in the robe, and holding the pistol in both hands, aimed it at the man as he rode toward him. He had never seen this man before. The horseman was almost opposite him now. He was riding a big gray gelding, and he wore a khaki beret, a blanket cape like a poncho, and heavy black boots. From the scabbard on the right of his saddle projected the stock and the long oblong clip of a short automatic rifle. He had a young, hard face, and at this moment he saw Robert Jordan. He reached his hand down toward the scabbard, and as he swung low, turning and jerking at the scabbard, Robert Jordan saw the scarlet of the formalized device he wore on the left breast of his khaki blanket cape. Aiming at the center of his chest, a little lower than the device, Robert Jordan fired. The pistol roared in the snowy woods. The horse plunged as though he had been spurred, and the young man, still tugging at the scabbard, slid over toward the ground, his right foot caught in the stirrup. The horse broke off through the trees, dragging him, bumping, face downward, and Robert Jordan stood up, holding the pistol now in one hand. The big gray horse was galloping through the pines. There was a broad swath in the snow, where the man dragged, with a scarlet streak along one side of it. People were coming out of the mouth of the cave. Robert Jordan reached down and unrolled his trousers from the pillow and began to put them on.
Get thee dressed, he said to Maria.
Overhead he heard the noise of a plane flying very high. Through the trees he saw where the gray horse had stopped and was standing, his rider still hanging face down from the stirrup. Go catch that horse, he called to Primitivo, who had started over toward him. Then, who was on guard at the top?
Rafael,
Pilar said from the cave. She stood there, her hair still down her back in two braids.
There's cavalry out, Robert Jordan said. Get your damned gun up there.
He heard Pilar call,
Augustin,
into the cave. Then she went into the cave, and then two men came running out, one with the automatic rifle with its tripod swung on his shoulder, the other with a sackful of the pans. Get up there with them, Robert Jordan said to Anselmo. You lie beside the gun and hold the leg still, he said. The three of them went up the trail through the woods at a run. The sun had not yet come up over the tops of the mountains, and Robert Jordan stood straight, buttoning his trousers and tightening his belt, the big pistol hanging from the lanyard on his wrist. He put the pistol in its holster on his belt and slipped the knot down on the lanyard and passed the loop over his head. "Somebody will choke you with that sometime," he thought. "Well, this has done it." He took the pistol out of the holster, removed the clip, inserted one of the cartridges from the row alongside of the holster, and shoved the clip back into the butt of the pistol. He looked through the trees to where Primitivo, holding the reins of the horse, was twisting the rider's foot out of the stirrup. The body lay face down in the snow, and as he watched, Primitivo was going through the pockets. "Come on," he called. "Bring the horse." As he knelt to put on his rope-soled shoes, Robert Jordan could feel Maria against his knees, dressing herself under the robe. She had no place in his life now. That cavalryman did not expect anything, he was thinking. He was not following horse tracks, and he was not even properly alert, let alone alarmed. He was not even following the tracks up to the post. He must have been one of a patrol scattered out in these hills. But when the patrol misses him, they will follow his tracks here. Unless the snow melts first, he thought. Unless something happens to the patrol. "You better get down below," he said to Pablo. They were all out of the cave now, standing there with the carbines and with grenades on their belts. Pilar held a leather bag of grenades toward Robert Jordan, and he took three and put them in his pocket. He ducked into the cave, found his two packs, opened the one with the submachine gun in it, and took out the barrel and stock, slipped the stock onto the forward assembly, and put one clip into the gun and three in his pockets. He locked the pack and started for the door. "I've got two pockets full of hardware," he thought. "I hope the seams hold." He came out of the cave and said to Pablo, "I'm going up above. Can Augustine shoot that gun?" "Yes," Pablo said. He was watching Primitivo leading up the horse. "Mira que caballo," he said. "Look what a horse." The big gray was sweating and shivering a little, and Robert Jordan patted him on the withers. "I will put him with the others," Pablo said. "No," Robert Jordan said. "He has made tracks into here. He must make them out." "True," agreed Pablo. "I will ride him out and will hide him and bring him in when the snow is melted. Thou hast much head today, Inglés." "Send someone below," Robert Jordan said. "We've got to get up there." "It is not necessary," Pablo said. "Horsemen cannot come that way, but we can get out, by there and by two other places. It is better not to make tracks if there are planes coming. Give me the bota with wine, Pilar." "To go off and get drunk," Pilar said. "Here, take these instead." He reached over and put two of the grenades in his pockets. "Que va to get drunk," Pablo said. "There is gravity in the situation. But give me the bota. I do not like to do all this on water." He reached his arms up, took the reins, and swung up into the saddle. He grinned and patted the nervous horse. Robert Jordan saw him rub his leg along the horse's flank affectionately. "Que caballo más bonita," he said, and patted the big gray again. "Que caballo más hermoso. Come on. The faster this gets out of here, the better." He reached down and pulled the light automatic rifle from its ventilated barrel, really a submachine gun built to take the 9mm pistol cartridge, from the scabbard, and looked at it. "Look how they are armed," he said. "Look at modern cavalry." "There's modern cavalry over there on his face," Robert Jordan said. "Vámonos." "Do you, Andrés, saddle and hold the horses in readiness. If you hear firing, bring them up to the woods behind the gap. Come with thy arms and leave the women to hold the horses. Fernando, see that my sacks are brought also. Above all, that my sacks are brought carefully. Thou to look after my sacks too," he said to Pilar. "Thou to verify that they come with the horses. Vámonos," he said. "Let us go." "De Maria and I will prepare all for leaving," Pilar said. Then to Robert Jordan. "Look at him," nodding at Pablo on the gray horse, sitting him in the heavy-thighed herdsman manner, the horse's nostrils widening as Pablo replaced the clip in the automatic rifle. "See what a horse has done for him?" "That I should have two horses," Robert Jordan said fervently. "Danger is thy horse." "Then give me a mule," Robert Jordan grinned. "Strip me that," he said to Pilar, and jerked his head toward where the man lay face down in the snow. "And bring everything, all the letters and papers, and put them in the outside pocket of my sack. Everything, understand?" "Yes. Vámonos," he said. Pablo rode ahead, and the two men followed in a single file in order not to track up the snow. Robert Jordan carried the submachine gun muzzle down, carrying it by its forward hand grip. I wish it took the same ammunition that saddle gun takes, he thought. But it doesn't. This is a German gun. This was old Koshkin's gun. The sun was coming over the mountains now. A warm wind was blowing, and the snow was melting. It was a lovely late spring morning. Robert Jordan looked back and saw Maria now standing with Pilar. Then she came running up the trail. He dropped behind Primitivo to speak to her.
Thou, she said, can I go with thee?
No, help Pilar. She was walking behind him and put her hand on his arm.
I'm coming.
Nay. She kept on walking close behind him.
I could hold the legs of the gun in the way thou told Anselmo.
Thou wilt hold no legs, neither of guns nor of nothing. Walking beside him, she reached forward and put her hand in his pocket.
No, he said, but take good care of thy wedding shirt. Kiss me, she said, if thou goest.
Thou art shameless, he said.
Yes, she said, totally.
Get thee back now. There is much work to do. We may fight here if they follow these horse tracks.
Thou, she said, didst thee see what he wore on his chest?
Yes, why not?
It was the Sacred Heart.
Yes, all the people of Navarre wear it.
And thou shot for that?
No, below it. Get thee back now.
Thou, she said, I saw all.
Thou saw nothing. One man from a horse.
Vete, get thee back. Say that you love me.
No, not now.
Not love me now?
Dejamos, get thee back. One does not do that and love all at the same moment.
I want to go to hold the legs of the gun, and while it speaks, love thee all in the same moment.
Thou art crazy. Get thee back now.
I am crazy, she said. I love thee.
Then get thee back.
Good, I go. And if thou dost not love me, I love thee enough for both.
He looked at her and smiled through his thinking. When you hear firing, he said, come with the horses. Aid the Pilar with my sacks. It is possible there will be nothing. I hope so.
I go, she said. Look what a horse Pablo rides.
The big gray was moving ahead up the trail.
Yes, but go. I go.
Her fist, clenched tight in his pocket, beat hard against his thigh. He looked at her and saw there were tears in her eyes. She pulled her fist out of his pocket and put both arms tight around his neck and kissed him.
I go, she said. Me voy. I go.
He looked back and saw her standing there, the first morning sunlight on her brown face and the cropped, tawny, burned gold hair. She lifted her fist at him and turned and walked back down the trail, her head down. Primitivo turned around and looked after her.
If she did not have her hair cut so short, she would be a pretty girl, he said.
Yes, Robert Jordan said. He was thinking of something else.
How is she in the bed? Primitivo asked.
What?
In the bed.
Watch thy mouth.
One should not be offended when—
Leave it, Robert Jordan said. He was looking at the position.
Chapter 22. Cut me pine branches, Robert Jordan said to Primitivo, and bring them quickly. I do not like the gun there, he said to Augustine.
Why?
Place it over there, Robert Jordan pointed, and later I will tell thee. Here, thus. Let me help thee. Here, he said, then squatted down. He looked out across the narrow oblong, noting the height of the rocks on either side. It must be farther, he said, farther out. Good. Here. That will do until it can be done properly. There. Put the stones there. Here is one. Put another there at the side. Leave room for the muzzle to swing. The stone must be farther to this side. Anselmo, get thee down to the cave and bring me an axe, quickly. Have you never had a proper emplacement for the gun? He said to Augustine.
We always placed it here.
Koshkin never said to put it there?
No. The gun was brought after he left.
Did no one bring it who knew how to use it?
No, it was brought by porters.
What a way to do things, Robert Jordan said. It was just given to you without instruction?
Yes, as a gift might be given. One for us and one for El Sordo. Four men brought them. Anselmo guided them.
It was a wonder they did not lose them with four men to cross the lines.
I thought so too, Augustine said. I thought those who sent them meant for them to be lost. But Anselmo brought them well.
You know how to handle it?
Yes, I have experimented. I know. Pablo knows. Primitivo knows. So does Fernando. We have made a study of taking it apart and putting it together on the table in the cave. Once we had it apart and could not get it together for 2 days. Since then, we have not had it apart.
Does it shoot now?
Yes. But we do not let the gypsy nor others frig with it.
You see, from there it was useless, he said. Look, those rocks which should protect your flanks give cover to those who will attack you. With such a gun you must see a flatness over which to fire. Also you must take them sideways, see? Look now, all that is dominated.
I see, said Augustine, but we have never fought in defense except when our town was taken. At the train there were soldiers with the machina.
Then we will all learn together, Robert Jordan said. There are a few things to observe. Where is the gypsy who should be here?
I do not know.
Where is it possible for him to be?
I do not know.
Pablo had ridden out through the pass and turned once and ridden in a circle across the level space at the top that was the field of fire for the automatic rifle. Now Robert Jordan watched him riding down the slope alongside the tracks the horse had left when he was ridden in. He disappeared in the trees, turning to the left. I hope he doesn't run right into cavalry, Robert Jordan thought. I'm afraid we'd have him right here in our laps. Primitivo brought the pine branches, and Robert Jordan stuck them through the snow into the unfrozen earth, arching them over the gun from either side. Bring more, he said. There must be cover for the two men who serve it. This is not good, but it will serve until the axe comes. Listen, he said. If you hear a plane, lie flat wherever thou art in the shadows of the rocks. I am here with the gun. Now, with the sun up and the warm wind blowing, it was pleasant on the side of the rocks where the sun shone. Four horses, Robert Jordan thought. The two women and me, Anselmo, Primitivo, Fernando, Augustine. What the hell is the name of that other brother? That's eight, not counting the gypsy. Makes nine, plus Pablo gone with one horse makes 10. Andres is his name, the other brother, plus the other, Eladio, makes 10. That's not one half a horse apiece. Three men can hold this and four can get away, five with Pablo. That's two left over, three with Eladio. Where the hell is he? God knows what will happen to Sordo today if they picked up the trail of those horses in the snow. That was tough, the snow stopping that way. But it melting today will even things up. But not for Sordo. I'm afraid it's too late to even it up for Sordo. If we can last through today and not have to fight, we can swing the whole show tomorrow with what we have. I know we can. Not well, maybe. Not as it should be, to be foolproof. Not as we would have done. But using everybody, we can swing it. If we don't have to fight today. God help us if we have to fight today. I don't know any place better to lay up in the meantime than this. If we move now, we only leave tracks. This is as good a place as any. And if the worst gets to be the worst, there are three ways out of this place. There is the dark then to come, and from wherever we are in these hills, I can reach and do the bridge at daylight. I don't know why I worried about it before. It seems easy enough now. I hope they get the planes up on time for once. I certainly hope that. Tomorrow is going to be a day with dust on the road. Well, today will be very interesting or very dull. Thank God we've got that cavalry mount out and away from here. I don't think even if they ride right up here they will go in, the way those tracks are now. They'll think he stopped and circled, and they'll pick up Pablo's tracks. I wonder where the old swine will go. He'll probably leave tracks like an old bull elk spooking out of the country, and work way up, and then, when the snow melts, circle back below. That horse certainly did things for him. Of course he may have just mucked off with him, too. Well, he should be able to take care of himself. He's been doing this a long time. I wouldn't trust him farther than you can throw Mount Everest, though. I suppose it's smarter to use these rocks and build a good blind for this gun than to make a proper emplacement for it. You'd be digging and get caught with your pants down if they come, or if the planes come. She will hold this, the way she is, as long as it is any use to hold it. And anyway, I can't stay to fight. I have to get out of here with that stuff, and I'm going to take Anselmo with me. Who would stay to cover us while we got away if we have to fight here? Just then, while he was watching all of the country that was visible, he saw the gypsy coming through the rocks to the left. He was walking with a loose, high-hipped, sloppy swing. His carbine was slung on his back, his brown face was grinning, and he carried two big hares, one in each hand. He carried them by the legs, head swinging.
Hola, Roberto,
he called cheerfully.
Robert Jordan put his hand to his mouth, and the gypsy looked startled. He slid over behind the rocks to where Robert Jordan was crouched beside the brush-shielded automatic rifle. He crouched down and laid the hairs in the snow. Robert Jordan looked up at him.
"You hijo de la gran puta," he said softly. "Where the obscenity have you been?"
"I trapped them," the gypsy said. "I got them both. They have made love in the snow."
"And thy post?"
"It was not for long,"
the gypsy whispered.
"What passes? Is there an alarm?"
"There is cavalry out."
"Redios,"
the gypsy said.
"Hast thou seen them?"
"There is one at the camp now," Robert Jordan said. "He came for breakfast."
"I thought I heard a shot or something like one," the gypsy said. "I obscenity in the milk. Did he come through here?"
"Here. Thy post."
"Ay, mi madre," the gypsy said. "I am a poor, unlucky man."
"If thou wert not a gypsy, I would shoot thee."
"No, Roberto, don't say that. I am sorry. It was the hares. Before daylight, I heard the male thumping in the snow. You cannot imagine what a debauch they were engaged in. I went toward the noise, but they were gone. I followed the tracks in the snow, and high up I found them together and slew them both. Feel the fatness of the two for this time of year. Think what the Pilar will do with those two. I am sorry, Roberto, as sorry as thee. Was the cavalryman killed?"
"Yes."
"By thee?"
"Yes."
"Que tío,"
the gypsy said in open flattery.
"Thou art a veritable phenomenon."
"Thy mother," Robert Jordan said. He could not help grinning at the gypsy. "Take thy hares to camp and bring us up some breakfast." He put a hand out and felt of the hares that lay limp, long, heavy, thick-furred, big-footed, and long-eared in the snow, their round, dark eyes open. "They are fat," he said.
"Fat," the gypsy said. "There's a tub of lard on the ribs of each one. In my life have I never dreamed of such hares."
"Go then," Robert Jordan said, "and come quickly with the breakfast, and bring to me the documentation of that requete. Ask Pilar for it."
"You are not angry with me, Roberto?"
"Not angry. Disgusted that you should leave your post. Suppose it had been a troop of cavalry."
"Redios,"
the gypsy said.
"How reasonable you are."
"Listen to me. You cannot leave a post again like that. Never. I do not speak of shooting lightly."
"Of course not. And another thing. Never would such an opportunity as the two hares present itself again. Not in the life of one man."
"Anda," Robert Jordan said, "and hurry back." The gypsy picked up the two hares and slipped back through the rocks, and Robert Jordan looked out across the flat opening and the slopes of the hill below. Two crows circled overhead and then lit in a pine tree below. Another crow joined them, and Robert Jordan, watching them, thought, "Those are my sentinels. As long as those are quiet, there is no one coming through the trees." "The gypsy," he thought, "he is truly worthless. He has no political development nor any discipline, and you could not rely on him for anything. But I need him for tomorrow. I have a use for him tomorrow." It's odd to see a gypsy in a war. They should be exempted like conscientious objectors, or as the physically and mentally unfit. They are worthless. But conscientious objectors weren't exempted in this war. No one was exempted. It came to one and all alike. Well, it had come here now to this lazy outfit. They had it now. Augustine and Primitivo came up with the brush, and Robert Jordan built a good blind for the automatic rifle, a blind that would conceal the gun from the air and that would look natural from the forest. He showed them where to place a man high in the rocks to the right, where he could see all the country below and to the right, and another where he could command the only stretch where the left wall might be climbed. "Do not fire if you see anyone from there," Robert Jordan said. "Roll a rock down as a warning, a small rock, and signal to us with thy rifle, thus." He lifted the rifle and held it over his head, as though guarding it. "Thus for numbers." He lifted the rifle up and down. "If they are dismounted, point thy rifle muzzle at the ground, thus. Do not fire from there until thou hearest the machina fire. Shoot at a man's knees when you shoot from that height. If you hear me whistle twice on this whistle, get down, keeping behind cover, and come to these rocks where the machina is." Primitivo raised the rifle.
"I understand," he said. "It is very simple."
"Send first the small rock as a warning, and indicate the direction and the number. See that you are not seen."
"Yes,"
Primitivo said.
"If I can throw a grenade?"
"Not until the machina has spoken,
It may be that cavalry will come searching for their comrade and still not try to enter. They may follow the tracks of Pablo. We do not want combat if it can be avoided. Above all, that we should avoid it. Now get up there.
Me voy,
Primitivo said, and climbed up into the high rocks with his carbine. Thou, Augustine, Robert Jordan said, what do you know of the gun? Augustine squatted there, tall, black, stubbly jeweled, with his sunken eyes and thin mouth and his big, work-worn hands.
Pues to load it, to aim it, to shoot it, nothing more.
You must not fire until they are within 50 meters, and only when you are sure they will be coming into the pass which leads to the cave, Robert Jordan said. Yes, how far is that?
That rock.
If there is an officer, shoot him first. Then move the gun onto the others. Move very slowly. It takes little movement. I will teach Fernando to tap it. Hold it tight so that it does not jump, and sight carefully and do not fire more than 6 shots at a time if you can help it. For the fire of the gun jumps upward. But each time fire at one man and then move from him to another. At a man on a horse, shoot at his belly.
Yes.
One man should hold the tripod still so that the gun does not jump, thus. He will load the gun for thee.
And where will you be?
I will be here on the left, above where I can see all, and I will cover thy left with this small machina. Here. If they should come, it would be possible to make a massacre. But you must not fire until they are that close.
I believe that we could make a massacre. Menuda matanza.
But I hope they do not come.
If it were not for thy bridge, we could make a massacre here and get out.
It would avail nothing. That would serve no purpose. The bridge is a part of a plan to win the war. This would be nothing. This would be an incident. A nothing.
Que va, nothing. Every fascist dead is a fascist less.
Yes, but with this of the bridge we can take Segovia, the capital of a province. Think of that. It will be the first one we will take.
Thou believest in this seriously? That we can take Segovia?
Yes, it is possible with the bridge blown correctly.
I would like to have the massacre here, and the bridge too.
Thou hast much appetite, Robert Jordan told him. All this time he had been watching the crows. Now he saw one was watching something. The bird cawed and flew up, but the other crow still stayed in the tree. Robert Jordan looked up toward Primitivo's place high in the rocks. He saw him watching out over the country below, but he made no signal. Robert Jordan leaned forward and worked the lock on the automatic rifle, saw the round in the chamber, and let the lock down. The crow was still there in the tree. The other circled wide over the snow and then settled again. In the sun and the warm wind, the snow was falling from the laden branches of the pines. I have a massacre for thee for tomorrow morning, Robert Jordan said. It is necessary to exterminate the post at the sawmill.
I am ready, Augustine said. Estoy listo.
Also the post at the roadmender's hut below the bridge.
For the one or for the other,
Augustine said.
Or for both.
Not for both. They will be done at the same time, Robert Jordan said.
Then for either one, Augustine said. Now for a long time have I wished for action in this war. Pablo has rotted us here with inaction.
Anselmo came up with the axe.
Do you wish more branches? He asked. To me it seems well hidden.
Not branches, Robert Jordan said. Two small trees that we can plant here and there to make it look more natural. There are not enough trees here for it to be truly natural.
I will bring them.
Cut them well back so the stumps cannot be seen. Robert Jordan heard the axe sounding in the woods behind him. He looked up at Primitivo above in the rocks, and he looked down at the pines across the clearing. The one crow was still there. Then he heard the first high, throbbing murmur of a plane coming. He looked up and saw it high and tiny and silver in the sun, seeming hardly to move in the high sky.
They cannot see us, he said to Augustine. But it is well to keep down. That is the second observation plane today.
And those of yesterday?
Augustine asked. They are like a bad dream now, Robert Jordan said.
They must be at Segovia. The bad dream waits there to become a reality.
The plane was out of sight now, over the mountains, but the sound of its motors still persisted. As Robert Jordan looked, he saw the crow fly up. He flew straight away, through the trees, without cawing. Chapter 23
Get thee down,
Robert Jordan whispered to Augustine, and he turned his head and flicked his hand, down, down to Anselmo, who was coming through the gap with a pine tree, carrying it over his shoulder like a Christmas tree. He saw the old man drop his pine tree behind a rock, and then he was out of sight in the rocks, and Robert Jordan was looking ahead across the open space toward the timber. He saw nothing and heard nothing, but he could feel his heart pounding, and then he heard the clack of stone on stone and the leaping, dropping clicks of a small rock falling. He turned his head to the right, and looking up saw Primitivo's rifle raised and lowered four times horizontally. Then there was nothing more to see but the white stretch in front of him, with the circle of horse tracks and the timber beyond.
"Cavalry," he said softly to Augustine.
Augustine looked at him, and his dark, sunken cheeks widened at their base as he grinned. Robert Jordan noticed he was sweating. He reached over and put his hand on his shoulder. His hand was still there as they saw the four horsemen ride out of the timber, and he felt the muscles in Augustine's back twitch under his hand. One horseman was ahead, and three rode behind. The one ahead was following the horse tracks. He looked down as he rode. The other three came behind him, fanned out through the timber. They were all watching carefully. Robert Jordan felt his heart beating against the snowy ground as he lay, his elbows spread wide, and watched them over the sights of the automatic rifle. The man who was leading rode along the trail to where Pablo had circled and stopped. The others rode up to him, and they all stopped. Robert Jordan saw them clearly over the blued steel barrel of the automatic rifle. He saw the faces of the men, the sabers hanging, the sweat-darkened flanks of the horses, and the cone-like slope of the khaki capes and the Navarrese slant of the khaki berets. The leader turned his horse directly toward the opening in the rocks where the gun was placed, and Robert Jordan saw his young, sun and wind-darkened face, his close-set eyes, hawk nose, and the overlong wedge-shaped chin. Sitting his horse there, the horse's chest toward Robert Jordan, the horse's head high, the butt of the light automatic rifle projecting forward from the scabbard at the right of the saddle, the leader pointed toward the opening, where the gun was. Robert Jordan sunk his elbows into the ground and looked along the barrel at the four riders stopped there in the snow. Three of them had their automatic rifles out. Two carried them across the pommels of their saddles. The other sat his horse with the rifle swung out to the right, the butt resting against his hip. "You hardly ever see them at such range," he thought. "Not along the barrel of one of these do you see them like this. Usually the rear sight is raised, and they seem miniatures of men, and you have hell to make it carry up there. Or they come running, flopping, running, and you beat a slope with fire or bar a certain street, or keep it on the windows. Or far away you see them marching on a road. Only at the trains do you see them like this. Only then are they like now, and with four of these you can make them scatter. Over the gun sights at this range, it makes them twice the size of men." "Thou," he thought, looking at the wedge of the front sight placed now firm in the slot of the rear sight, the top of the wedge against the center of the leader's chest, a little to the right of the scarlet device that showed bright in the morning sun against the khaki cape. "Thou," he thought, thinking in Spanish now, and pressing his fingers forward against the trigger guard to keep it away from where it would bring the quick, shocking, hurtling rush from the automatic rifle. "Thou," he thought again, "thou art dead now in thy youth. And thou," he thought, "and thou, and thou. But let it not happen. Do not let it happen." He felt Augustine beside him start to cough, felt him hold it, choke and swallow. Then as he looked along the oiled blue of the barrel out through the opening between the branches, his finger still pressed forward against the trigger guard, he saw the leader turn his horse and point into the timber where Pablo's trail led. The four of them trotted into the timber, and Augustine said softly,
"Caprones."
Robert Jordan looked behind him at the rocks where Anselmo had dropped the tree. The gypsy Raphael was coming toward them through the rocks, carrying a pair of cloth saddlebags, his rifle slung on his back. Robert Jordan waved him down, and the gypsy ducked out of sight.
"We could have killed all four," Augustine said quietly.
He was still wet with sweat.
"Yes," Robert Jordan whispered, "but with the firing, who knows what might have come."
Just then he heard the noise of another rock falling, and he looked around quickly. But both the gypsy and Anselmo were out of sight. He looked at his wristwatch and then up to where Primitivo was raising and lowering his rifle in what seemed an infinity of short jerks. Pablo has 45 minutes start, Robert Jordan thought, and then he heard the noise of a body of cavalry coming.
No te apures, he whispered to Augustine. Do not worry. They will pass as the others.
They came into sight, trotting along the edge of the timber in column of twos, 20 mounted men, armed and uniformed as the others had been, their sabers swinging, their carbines in their holsters. And then they went down into the timber, as the others had.
Tu ves? Robert Jordan said to Augustine. Thou seest?
There were many, Augustine said.
These would we have had to deal with if we had destroyed the others, Robert Jordan said, very softly. His heart had quieted now, and his shirt felt wet on his chest from the melting snow. There was a hollow feeling in his chest. The sun was bright on the snow, and it was melting fast. He could see it hollowing away from the tree trunks, and just ahead of the gun, before his eyes, the snow surface was damp and lacily fragile as the heat of the sun melted the top and the warmth of the earth breathed warmly up at the snow that lay upon it. Robert Jordan looked up at Primitivo's post and saw him signal, nothing, crossing his two hands, palms down. Anselmo's head showed above a rock, and Robert Jordan motioned him up. The old man slipped from rock to rock until he crept up and lay down flat beside the gun.
Many, he said. Many.
I do not need the trees, Robert Jordan said to him. There is no need for further forestal improvement. Both Anselmo and Augustine grinned.
This has stood scrutiny well, and it would be dangerous to plant trees now because those people will return and perhaps they are not stupid. He felt the need to talk, that with him was the sign that there had just been much danger. He could always tell how bad it had been, by the strength of the desire to talk that came after.
It was a good blind, eh? He said.
Good, said Augustine. To obscenity with all fascism good. We could have killed the four of them. Didst thou see? He said to Anselmo.
I saw.
Thou, Robert Jordan said to Anselmo, thou must go to the post of yesterday, or another good post of thy selection, to watch the road and report on all movement as of yesterday. Already we are late in that. Stay until dark, then come in and we will send another.
But the tracks that I will make...
Go from below as soon as the snow is gone. The road will be muddied by the snow. Note if there has been much traffic of trucks, or if there are tank trucks in the softness on the road. That is all we can tell until you are there to observe.
With your permission, the old man asked.
Surely.
With your permission, would it not be better for me to go into La Granja and inquire there what passed last night, and arrange for one to observe today thus in the manner you have taught me? Such a one could report tonight, or better, I could go again to La Granja for the report.
Have you no fear of encountering cavalry?
Not when the snow is gone.
Is there someone in La Granja capable of this?
Yes, of this, yes. It would be a woman. There are various women of trust in La Granja.
I believe it, Augustine said. More, I know it. And several who serve for other purposes. You do not wish me to go?
Let the old man go. You understand this gun, and the day is not over.
I will go when the snow melts, Anselmo said, and the snow is melting fast.
What think you of their chance of catching Pablo? Robert Jordan asked Augustine.
Pablo is smart, Augustine said. Do men catch a wise stag without hounds?
Sometimes, Robert Jordan said.
Not Pablo, Augustine said. Clearly he is only a garbage of what he once was. But it is not for nothing that he is alive and comfortable in these hills, and able to drink himself to death while there are so many others that have died against a wall.
Is he as smart as they say?
He is much smarter.
He has not seemed of great ability here.
¿Cómo que no? If he were not of great ability, he would have died last night. He seems to me you do not understand politics, Inglés, nor guerrilla warfare. In politics, and this other, the first thing is to continue to exist. Look how he continued to exist last night, and the quantity of dung he ate both from me and from thee.
Now that Pablo was back in the movements of the unit, Robert Jordan did not wish to talk against him, and as soon as he had uttered it, he regretted saying the thing about his ability. He knew himself how smart Pablo was. It was Pablo who had seen instantly all that was wrong with the orders for the destruction of the bridge. He had made the remark only from dislike, and he knew as he made it that it was wrong. It was part of the talking too much after a strain. So now he dropped the matter and said to Anselmo, "And to go into La Granja in daylight?"
"It is not bad," the old man said. "I will not go with a military band."
"Nor with a bell around his neck," Augustine said, "nor carrying a banner."
"How will you go?"
"Above and down through the forest."
"But if they pick you up?"
"I have papers."
"So have we all. But thou must eat the wrong ones quickly." Anselmo shook his head and tapped the breast pocket of his smock.
"How many times have I contemplated that," he said, "and never did I like to swallow paper."
"I have thought we should carry a little mustard on them all," Robert Jordan said. "In my left breast pocket, I carry our papers, in my right the fascist papers. Thus one does not make a mistake in an emergency." It must have been bad enough when the leader of the first patrol of cavalry had pointed toward the entry, because they were all talking very much. Too much, Robert Jordan thought.
"But look, Roberto," Augustine said. "They say the government moves further to the right each day. That in the Republic they no longer say comrade, but signor and signora. Canst shift thy pockets?"
"When it moves far enough to the right, I will carry them in my hip pocket," Robert Jordan said, "and sew it in the center."
"That they should stay in thy shirt," Augustine said. "Are we to win this war and lose the revolution?"
"Nay," Robert Jordan said. "But if we do not win this war, there will be no revolution, nor any republic, nor any thou, nor any me, nor anything, but the most grand carajo."
"So say I," Anselmo said, "that we should win the war."
"And afterwards shoot the anarchists and the communists and all this canalla except the good republicans," Augustine said.
"That we should win this war and shoot nobody," Anselmo said.
"That we should govern justly, and that all should participate in the benefits according as they have striven for them. And that those who have fought against us should be educated to see their error."
"We will have to shoot many," Augustine said. "Many, many, many."
He thumped his closed right fist against the palm of his left hand.
"That we should shoot none, not even the leaders. That they should be reformed by work."
"I know the work I'd put them at," Augustine said,
and he picked up some snow and put it in his mouth. "What, bad one?" Robert Jordan asked.
"Two trades of the utmost brilliance."
"They are?" Augustine put some more snow in his mouth and looked across the clearing where the cavalry had ridden. Then he spat the melted snow out.
"Maya, what a breakfast," he said. "Where is the filthy gypsy?"
"What trades?" Robert Jordan asked him. "Speak, bad mouth."
"Jumping from planes without parachutes," Augustine said, and his eyes shone. "That for those we care for. And being nailed to the tops of fence posts to be pushed over backwards for the others."
"That way of speaking is ignoble," Anselmo said. "Thus we will never have a republic."
"I would like to swim 10 leagues in a strong soup made from the cojones of all of them," Augustine said. "And when I saw those 4 there, and thought that we might kill them, I was like a mare in the corral waiting for the stallion."
"You know why we did not kill them, though," Robert Jordan said quietly.
"Yes," Augustine said, "yes. But the necessity was on me as it is on a mare in heat. You cannot know what it is if you have not felt it."
"You sweated enough," Robert Jordan said. "I thought it was fear."
"Fear, yes," Augustine said, "fear and the other. And in this life there is no stronger thing than the other."
"Yes," Robert Jordan thought. "We do it coldly, but they do not, nor ever have. It is their extra sacrament, their old one, that they had before the new religion came from the far end of the Mediterranean, the one they have never abandoned, but only suppressed and hidden to bring it out again in wars and inquisitions. They are the people of the auto de fe, the act of faith. Killing is something one must do, but ours are different from theirs." "And you," he thought, "you have never been corrupted by it? You never had it in the Sierra, nor at Usera, nor through all the time in Estremadura, nor at any time?"
"Que va," he told himself, "at every train."
"Stop making dubious literature about the Berbers and the old Iberians and admit that you have liked to kill as all who are soldiers by choice have enjoyed it at some time, whether they lie about it or not. Anselmo does not like it because he is a hunter, not a soldier. Don't idealize him either. Hunters kill animals and soldiers kill men. Don't lie to yourself, he thought, nor make up literature about it. You have been tainted with it for a long time now. And do not think against Anselmo either. He is a Christian, something very rare in Catholic countries. But with Augustine I had thought it was fear, he thought. That natural fear before action. So it was the other, too. Of course he may be bragging now. There was plenty of fear. I felt the fear under my hand. Well, it was time to stop talking. See if the gypsy brought food, he said to Anselmo. Do not let him come up. He is a fool. Bring it yourself. And however much he brought, send back for more. I am hungry. Chapter 24. Now the morning was late May. The sky was high and clear, and the wind blew warm on Robert Jordan's shoulders. The snow was going fast, and they were eating breakfast. There were two big sandwiches of meat and the goaty cheese apiece, and Robert Jordan had cut thick slices of onion with his clasp knife and put them on each side of the meat and cheese between the chunks of bread.
You will have a breath that will carry through the forest to the fascists, Augustine said, his own mouth full.
Give me the wineskin and I will rinse the mouth, Robert Jordan said, his mouth full of meat, cheese, onion, and chewed bread. He had never been hungrier, and he filled his mouth with wine, faintly tarry tasting from the leather bag, and swallowed. Then he took another big mouthful of wine, lifting the bag up to let the jet of wine spurt into the back of his mouth, the wineskin touching the needles of the blind of pine branches that covered the automatic rifle as he lifted his hand, his head leaning against the pine branches as he bent it back to let the wine run down.
"Dost thou want this other sandwich?" Augustine asked him,
handing it toward him across the gun. "No, thank you. Eat it."
"I cannot. I am not accustomed to eat in the morning."
"You do not want it, truly?"
"Nay, take it."
Robert Jordan took it and laid it on his lap while he got the onion out of his side jacket pocket where the grenades were and opened his knife to slice it. He cut off a thin sliver of the surface that had dirtied in his pocket, then cut a thick slice. An outer segment fell and he picked it up and bent the circle together and put it into the sandwich.
"Eatest thou always onions for breakfast?" Augustine asked.
"When there are any."
"Do all in thy country do this?"
"Nay," Robert Jordan said. "It is looked on badly there."
"I am glad," Augustine said. "I had always considered America a civilized country."
"What hast thou against the onion?"
"The odor, nothing more. Otherwise it is like the rose."
Robert Jordan grinned at him with his mouth full. "Like the rose," he said. "Mighty like the rose. A rose is a rose is an onion."
"Thy onions are affecting thy brain," Augustine said. "Take care."
"An onion is an onion is an onion," Robert Jordan said cheerily. And he thought, "A stone is a stein, is a rock, is a boulder, is a pebble."
"Rinse thy mouth with wine," Augustine said. "Thou art very rare, Inglés. There is great difference between thee and the last dynamiter who worked with us."
"There is one great difference."
"Tell it to me."
"I am alive and he is dead," Robert Jordan said. Then, what's the matter with you, he thought. Is that the way to talk? Does food make you that slap happy? What are you, drunk on onions? Is that all it means to you now? It never meant much, he told himself truly. You tried to make it mean something, but it never did. There is no need to lie in the time that is left. "No," he said, seriously now. That one was a man who had suffered greatly.
"And thou? Hast thou not suffered?"
"No," said Robert Jordan. "I am of those who suffer little."
"Me also,"
Augustine told him.
"There are those who suffer and those who do not. I suffer very little."
"Less bad," Robert Jordan tipped up the wineskin again. "And with this, less."
"I suffer for others."
"As all good men should."
"But for myself, very little."
"Hast thou a wife?"
"No."
"Me neither."
"But now you have the Maria."
"Yes."
"There is a rare thing," Augustine said. "Since she came to us at the train, the Pilar has kept her away from all as fiercely as though she were in a convent of Carmelites. You cannot imagine with what fierceness she guarded her. You come, and she gives her to thee as a present. How does that seem to thee?"
It was not thus.
How was it then?
She has put her in my care.
And thy care is to hold there with her all night?
With luck.
What a manner to care for one.
You do not understand that one can take good care of one thus?
Yes, but such care could have been furnished by any one of us.
Let us not talk of it any more, Robert Jordan said. I care for her seriously.
Seriously?
As there can be nothing more serious in this world.
And afterwards? After this of the bridge?
She goes with me.
Then, Augustine said, that no one speaks of it further, and that the two of you go with all luck.
He lifted the leather wine bag and took a long pull, then handed it to Robert Jordan.
One thing more, Inglés, he said.
Of course.
I have cared much for her, too.
Robert Jordan put his hand on his shoulder.
Much, Augustine said. Much. More than one is able to imagine.
I can imagine.
She has made an impression on me that does not dissipate.
I can imagine.
Look, I say this to thee in all seriousness.
Say it.
I have never touched her, nor had anything to do with her, but I care for her greatly. Inglés, do not treat her lightly. Because she sleeps with thee, she is no whore.
I will care for her.
I believe thee, but more. You do not understand how such a girl would be if there had been no revolution. You have much responsibility. This one, truly, has suffered much. She is not as we are.
I will marry her.
Nay, not that. There is no need for that under the revolution. But,
he nodded his head,
it would be better.
I will marry her, Robert Jordan said, and could feel his throat swelling as he said it. I care for her greatly.
Later, Augustine said, when it is convenient. The important thing is to have the intention.
I have it.
Listen, Augustine said. I am speaking too much of a matter in which I have no right to intervene. But hast thou known many girls of this country?
A few.
Whores?
Some who were not.
How many?
Several.
And did you sleep with them?
No.
You see?
Yes.
What I mean is that this Maria does not do this lightly.
Nor I.
If I thought you did, I would have shot you last night as you lay with her. For this we kill much here.
Listen, old one, Robert Jordan said. It is because of the lack of time that there has been informality. What we do not have is time. Tomorrow we must fight. To me that is nothing. But for the Maria and me, it means that we must live all of our life in this time.
And a day and a night is little time, Augustine said.
Yes, but there has been yesterday and the night before and last night.
Look, Augustine said, if I can aid thee.
No, we are all right.
If I could do anything for thee or for the cropped head.
No.
Truly there is little one man can do for another.
No, there is much.
What?
No matter what passes today and tomorrow in respect to combat, give me thy confidence and obey, even though the orders may appear wrong.
You have my confidence, since this of the cavalry and the sending away of the horse.
That was nothing. You see that we are working for one thing, to win the war. Unless we win, all other things are futile. Tomorrow, we have a thing of great importance, of true importance. Also, we will have combat. In combat, there must be discipline. For many things are not as they appear. Discipline must come from trust and confidence. Augustine spat on the ground.
The Maria and all such things are apart, he said. That you and the Maria should make use of what time there is as two human beings. If I can aid thee, I am at thy orders. But for the thing of tomorrow, I will obey thee blindly. If it is necessary that one should die for the thing of tomorrow, one goes gladly and with the heart light.
Thus do I feel, Robert Jordan said. But to hear it from thee brings pleasure.
And more,
Augustine said.
That one above?
He pointed toward Primitivo.
Is a dependable value. The Pilar is much, much more than thou canst imagine. The old man Anselmo also. Andres also. Eladio also. Very quiet, but a dependable element. And Fernando. I do not know how thou hast appreciated him. It is true he is heavier than Mercury. He is fuller of boredom than a steer drawing a cart on the high road. But to fight and to do as he is told, es muy hombre. Thou wilt see.
We are lucky.
No, we have two weak elements, the gypsy and Pablo.